The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Okay, welcome back. I can't believe it's taken this long for this breaking news to break, to happen. And we would tell our kids when they were much younger, don't delight in your brother or sister's suffering. Don't delight in their suffering. So that rule still applies, right? So here's the breaking news today. And again, I'll just see what your reaction is. Dr. Anthony Fauci, Pope Fauci, as I like to call him, tests positive for COVID, is having mild symptoms. Fauci, who is fully vaccinated and twice boosted, fully vaccinated. The focus is off again in here. Fully vaccinated and twice boosted against COVID, is experiencing. See where the little box is for autofocus?
Yeah, it keeps going left.
It needs to be on me. Okay. Fully vaccinated, twice boosted against COVID, is experiencing mild symptoms. He is 81, so that's serious when anybody that age gets anything, whether it's COVID or anything else. It's a serious thing. But when it comes to Fauci, I'm just going to leave that one there between each of us and the Lord as to how we choose to deal with that one. But it is funny, even here in this article, fully vaccinated. No, he is not. Sorry to my friends at YouTube who like to bounce us off of there whenever I talk about COVID or vaccines or anything else. Ivermectin, anything else, tends to get you bounced on YouTube. It's not, by definition, a vaccine. A vaccine, friends, in case you just want to Google it, just look it up right quick. A vaccine prevents you from getting a virus. The COVID shots do not. Praise the Lord that, especially for people that are more susceptible, older people, people with more comorbidities, it definitely decreases the severity. But it does not keep you from getting COVID, Dr. Fauci. So your fully vaccinated, twice boosted self is still not protected from the COVID. So there you go. Breaking news. You make of it what you will. All right, here's another one. This was huge today. We talked about it with David Fisher the other day. Fed raises interest rates by 75 basis points. That means if it's at like 2, then it goes to 2.75. Okay, that's what that means with this kind of language that you use there. The Federal Reserve on Wednesday raised its benchmark interest rate by 75 basis points for the first time in nearly 3 decades. Good job, guys. Way to shoot for the stars. As policymakers intensify their fight to cool red-hot inflation, the 75 basis point hike, the first time since 94, underscores just how serious Fed officials are tackling the inflation crisis after a string of alarming economic reports. The move puts the key benchmark federal funds rate at between 1.5% and 1.75%, the highest since the pandemic began 2 years ago. This is interesting reading on. They expect interest rates to hit 3.4% by the end of 2022. Okay, so that's going to be twice what it is right now, which would be the highest level since 2008. Inflation, quote, inflation remains elevated, reflecting supply and demand imbalances related to the pandemic, higher energy prices, and broader price pressures, the Fed said. But the dismal Labor Department report last week showed the consumer price index rose 8.6% in May from a year ago, the fastest pace since December 1981, dashing economists' hopes that the inflation spike was starting to fade. What are they talking about? That's ridiculous. Chairman Jerome Powell said that policymakers were looking for evidence that monthly inflation was flattening or starting to fall. There is not. With consumer prices repeatedly surprising to the upside, officials determined that strong action was warranted. So it'll happen again in July, a half point or three quarter point increase, most likely in July. But we'll make our decisions on a week by week basis, which is why this caught my attention earlier today. My friend Steve Hobbs, his brother, Forrest, is a good friend of mine, has been on the show before, called in. A bunch of smart people in the Hobbs family. So he, Alcova.com, a mortgage broker, okay? He's done ours for the Noble houses. We don't have multiple. I mean, like when we buy and sell. So here we go. Let's talk Fed interest rates and mortgage rates, Steve wrote earlier today. Today, rates will move depending on the Fed. And, of course, they did, up 3.75 basis points. Okay, it's a big deal. We don't know what the Federal Reserve hike amount will be. Yes, we do. And now we do. So it may get worse or better. Monday was one of the five worst days for mortgage rates in the past 20 years. Last Friday was pretty bad for mortgage rates, too. Inflation numbers were worse than expected, and it spooked the markets. That's why we lost 800 points last Friday, right? At one point, mortgage-backed securities were down more than 160 basis points, which is massive, Steve writes. Movement like this hasn't happened this fast since 1994-ish. Inflation and Fed inaction are causing rapid rate increases. Okay, so if you're buying a house, okay, this is specific to you guys that are out there. You're in the housing market, which is very challenging. What does that mean? My buddy Steve says, unfortunately, that means if you were quoted a 5.5% rate on Friday, rates are now 6% or higher. Boom, fast. Look how fast that happened. These are projections for rates to continue to push up to 7% by the end of the summer. Wow. Ours is like down near 4. But saying all of this, it's projected that home values will continue to also increase. That's good news. It's not the time to step back from buying. Rent is going up everywhere, and it's still better to buy than rent for most people. Interest rates can always be refinanced in the future if a drop occurs. Also, if you were pre-approved a few weeks ago, listen up, everybody. If this is you, make sure you reach out to your loan officer again, like right away. You may not qualify for as much as you qualified for, even if you got pre-approved last week. So things are moving awfully quick. Okay, so especially if you're in the housing market, especially if you're going to change, buy a house, pick up a new mortgage, whatever. Things are moving so fast, which means you need to increase. And like I mentioned, Steve Hobbs and his team at Alcova, we have helped us several times. And so I saw this article that he wrote earlier today. Super helpful. Just understanding what's going on out there. If you're in the housing market, so if you want some help, there you go. I just recommended somebody for you, Steve Hobbs. Alcova.com is the website. Alcova.com. This is not a paid endorsement. It's not paid anything. Okay. These are friends of mine that have helped us. And I saw this on Facebook earlier today, especially given what just happened with that 0.75 basis points jump, which is historic. That you got to, if you're in the housing market, man, you got to move fast because things are changing quickly. So there you go. Alcova.com. We had President Trump on the other day. He was talking about two big races in South Carolina where he backed the challengers. How did he do? We'll talk about that when we come back. The big Texas GOP win, that was wild, with a growing power in the Hispanic community, which is probably really bad news for the open border people, otherwise known as the Democrat Party. We got a bunch of other things to talk about. Supreme Court, Loudoun County in the news again, and Chris Evans may probably think you're an idiot. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Moving right along. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show, thestevenobleshow.com. By the way, if you missed the show, because hey, Steve, I'm busy from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern time, Monday through Friday. Yeah, I get it. None of us live based on live schedules anymore, do we? Because you podcast, Netflix, whatever. We get what we want, when we want, wherever we want. All right, so we're on all the big podcast platforms. You can do that, or you can grab the Facebook Live video whenever you want, or YouTube Live. You can grab that so you can watch, because we have a sidebar conversation during the commercial breaks on radio. So that's kind of cool. Things are a little different. And when you can see me here in the studio, that just makes a totally different experience doing the show. So you got all that. That's available. Just go to thestevenobleshow.com. You can get links for all that kind of good stuff. I'll be on a plane in the morning for Nashville for the Faith and Freedom Convention, Majority 2022. President Trump speaking on Friday there. Got a bunch of other, it's an incredible lineup of speakers. I'm going to be trying to do radio there tomorrow and Friday. Every once in a while when I travel and do radio, I don't do that as much as I used to. I'll run into technical issues. Their internet doesn't work. It can be kind of complicated. So hopefully we'll be fine tomorrow, and I'll do Theology Thursday with Renton Rathbun, Dr. Rathbun at Bob Jones University, who's an incredible worldview teacher and thought leader. He's always great, one of my faves. So hopefully we'll do that tomorrow. And then Friday I'm going to work on getting as many great interviews as I can while I'm there. So on the plane tomorrow morning. So just pray for that everything goes well. And if it does, you'll be hearing me live from Nashville tomorrow and Friday. So we had Donald Trump on the other day. He wanted to talk about Two big races in South Carolina, where that was a split night for him. In South Carolina's 1st and 7th districts, upstart challengers backed by Trump were challenging incumbent Republicans who had crossed the former president. This is from an article I'm reading, which is literally why he went after him. One of those incumbent representatives, Tom Rice, lost his seat decisively. State lawmaker Russell Fry, whom Trump endorsed, raked in more than 50% of the vote in the state's 7th district to Rice's mere 24.5%. There were a bunch of candidates in that one. And then in the first district, so Trump won in that one, and he lost in the other one, in the first district. Incumbent Republican Nancy Mace held on to her seat, defeating Trump-backed challenger and former state lawmaker Katie Arrington by about 8 points. So you win some, you lose some, and that's what he said. You know, even if you win some, that's what you're trying to, from the president's perspective, you're trying to get the best people into the November election as you can, which is like trying to go in and basically fix the March Madness. The NCAA tournament, right? You want to get the best teams that you can to get to the to have a chance of winning the big game. And that's what you do. That's why primaries are so important. And then you may have heard about this, a big GOP, kind of a shocker in Texas. In March, Democratic Congressman Philemon Vela resigned his seat in a comfortably Democratic majority Hispanic district in Texas' Rio Grande Valley. Last night, Republican Maya Flores defeated Democrat Dan Sanchez outright to fill the seat in a special election. Flores won by a margin of about 2,000 votes, 51% to Sanchez's 43%. This has been a comfortable Democrat district for a long time. Her win is certainly something of a surprise, but perhaps less so for those who have been following changing trends in the region. Democrats mostly stayed out of the special election until late, while national Republicans leaned in to push for Flores. Then President Donald Trump cut the Democratic advantages in Texas' 34th district to single digits in 2020, part of a major GOP gains in the heavily Latino region. Previous Republican presidential candidates had lost the district by double digits to the likes of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. Now, Flores is part of a larger movement of GOP Latinas from South Texas vying for congressional seats, including Monica De La Cruz and Cassie Garcia. Republicans gained ground near the border in 2020. What? How's that possible? Because Donald Trump, obviously, and the Republicans hate Hispanic people, right? Mexicans, Guatemalans, wherever. They hate them all, obviously. So why did they start to do so well, Republican candidates, start to improve so much with Latinos? Well, that would be the economy. That's the tide that lifts all boats. So there you go. Right? So that's what was happening. So you get past the bombastic Trump and all that kind of stuff. And that's why he was making ground in the Hispanic vote, the African-American vote. And that's because a rising tide lifts all boats. That was fascinating to see. And based on the results from Texas yesterday, that's continuing. The Supreme Court, we're all wondering when they're going to come out with, God willing, the overturn of Roe versus Wade. There's a bunch of cases. All right. They've gone through. They've had a lot of decisions come out since March. There's about 18 left, and they only have a couple weeks left in the term to get all these decisions out. So they're going to drop all these stuff. These are big ones. OK, I'm going to take you to this list. These are really big Supreme Court cases that have yet to come out. Of course, we'll start with the obvious, Dobbs versus Jackson. Women's Health Organization, that's the one that would overturn Roe versus Wade, as well as Planned Parenthood of Southeastern Pennsylvania versus Casey. Okay, so that one still needs to drop. That's a huge one. Shockwaves. And God willing, they get rid of it. They overturn Roe. This is gonna get violent and ugly. I've shared just a couple of stories of some of these pregnancy resource centers that are getting firebombed and vandalized. It's going to get ugly. And it's going to get dangerous. And so if you go out and you volunteer and you're outside of an abortion clinic, once this decision comes, we're all going to need to be a lot more careful here. This is going to get ugly, unfortunately. So be praying about that. Berger versus North Carolina State Conference of the NAACP. The justices will decide whether North Carolina lawmakers may intervene in a lawsuit to defend the state's voter ID law because they disagree with the litigation strategy of the state attorney general. That would be Josh Stein, who's an uber liberal. So it's like, hey, I'll go in here and try to defend it, whatever. And so that's they're trying to go around the attorney general of the state of North Carolina, which they should. But can they do that? So that's a big case. Berger versus North Carolina State Conference of the NAACP. That hasn't come out yet. Biden versus Texas, another enormous one. The court will consider the Biden administration's decision to end the Remain in Mexico policy, also known as migrant protection protocols. The policy requires asylum seekers to stay in Mexico. What an amazing thought. While they await hearing in a U.S. immigration court, the current administration claims it can end that policy under the Immigration and Nationality Act. So that one, Biden v. Texas, that has to come out. These are huge decisions. Carson versus Macon. The issue in this case is whether a state law prohibiting students from using a generally available student aid program at private schools offering religious teachings violates the First Amendment religion and equal protection clauses. Okay, so this is all about religious freedom, okay? So you want to get some generally available, that's a really important phrase, generally available student aid program at private schools, but we won't let you use it if they you have like Christian teaching or Jewish teaching. No, no, you can't do that. So to say no to that is a violation of the First Amendment and equal protection clauses. You're discriminating based on religion. No, 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 no. You still can't do that in the United States of America. That's Carson versus Macon. That's a big one. Couple more. Kennedy versus Bremerton School District. You'll know this one. The justices will consider whether a public school violated the First Amendment rights of a football coach, Joseph A. Kennedy, who prayed with students after a game on a public football field. The school did not rehire Kennedy after the prayer controversy. Oh, boy. Wow. The nerve of this guy, who still has First Amendment rights, even when he works for the state, works for the local government via the school system. He goes out there. He didn't force everybody. He just goes out there to pray. People join him. Oh, no, you can't do that. That's a what about the wall of separation between church and state, which doesn't exist? It's not in the U.S. Constitution. So that's a big one. Kennedy versus Bremerton School District. That hasn't come out yet. Another huge religious freedom case. Two more to talk about, and then we'll move on. A lot to cover. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Okay, going through this list, these are enormous cases that the Supreme Court has yet to release their decision on. They only have a couple weeks left in this term for getting the decisions out. So the biggie, of course, Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization. That's the one that, God willing, will turn over Roe versus Wade. Here in North Carolina, dealing with voter ID, Biden versus Texas, which is the Remain in Mexico policy. That hasn't come out yet. Carson versus Macon, which is a big deal from a religious liberty perspective. The issue in that case is whether a state law prohibiting students from using a generally available student aid program at private schools offering religious teaching violates the First Amendment and equal protection. So you can use it anywhere unless they're talking about Jesus and stuff. Then you can't. Kennedy versus Bremerton School District. That was the coach, Joseph Kennedy. And they ended up getting rid of him because, you know, he had the audacity to go out after the game onto the field and pray, and students and whoever could come out and pray with him. No, you can't do that, man. This is America. We separate that stuff. Mm-hmm. Here's a big one on the Second Amendment. New York State Rifle and Pistol Association, Inc. versus Bruin. The court will consider whether New York State's denial of concealed carry licenses for self-defense violates the Second Amendment, and whether individuals generally have the right to carry concealed firearms outside the home for the purpose of self-defense. That is a big deal. Okay, so we haven't seen that one yet. New York State Rifle and Pistol Association v. Bruin. And then this last one, interesting. This is about government power. West Virginia versus the EPA. The court must decide whether the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, has the statutory authority, meaning, is it legal to regulate greenhouse gas emissions as it considers costs, non-air impacts, and energy requirements, or if those EPA powers were limited by Congress under the Clean Air Act? So who's got the power and the authority? Do you really want the EPA running around giving them a statutory authority, meaning like what they say is law, to regulate greenhouse gas emissions for various industries, what have you? That's a big deal. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Out of the remaining, I think, 18 or 19 cases that are enormous in scope and impact, especially the one dealing with Roe versus Wade. That's Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization. So keep praying for peace and pray for protection over the Supreme Court, that it wouldn't just become another playground for political maneuvering, because that's what it is right now. because they're not enforcing a federal law that says it's illegal to protest outside of judges' offices or homes and try to impact the court. That's like jury tampering, right? But they don't do anything about it, they being the Biden administration. It's disgusting. Okay, Loudoun County, that shows up every once in a while, talking about the school board. But this is something going on. We saw this with Chesa out in Chesa, whatever his name is, out in San Francisco, who just got recalled, the DA out there. And Loudoun County has got some problems with one of their progressive, the attorney's office out there. One particular person, which shows up in these two stories. I'm like, oh, this is an interesting one. This one caught my attention anyway. Loudoun County teen convicted of sexual assault avoids sex offender registry. Victim's parents respond. Remember this in Loudoun County? So this one kid sexually assaults a girl in one school, and they just moved him to another school where he did it again, including forcible sodomy. Okay? Remember that? And the school board basically hid it from parents, and they just moved him from one school to the next. Right, hey, we caught this jihadist over here. Let's just put him in a different mall. That's essentially what they did. So that's why this one caught my attention. And he's a minor. Should he be listed as on the sex offender registry for the rest of his life? I mean, if you're that crazy in high school to do that, not once, and then get caught, and then twice, yeah, I think you can make a pretty good case for it. So in this one, the Loudoun County teen male charged with sexual assault at two separate high schools was originally sentenced to register as a sex offender, receiving a black mark on his record for life. But a judge recently reversed her decision on that, allowing the teen to escape the sex offender registry. The parents of one of the victims blamed the county's Commonwealth's attorney, Buddha Bibaraj, for letting him off the hook. According to the lawyer representing the assailant, Bibaraj failed to follow the proper procedures in requesting the sex offender registration, which enabled the defense to demand a rehearing on the part of the sentence, and the judge vacated the registration requirement on rehearing and did not reinstate it. So the case here from Scott Smith, which is the father of the girl who this guy assaulted on May 28th at Stonebridge High School, came out and said, "We were always concerned that Ms. Bibaraj would not vigorously protect our daughter and seek justice for her and the other victims throughout the court proceedings. And it now appears that our fears have been proven true by her utter failure to follow even the most basic statutory procedures required to ensure that our daughter's predator would be placed on the Virginia sex offender registry list." The judge acknowledged that the court made an error in the original sentencing. So they went through a rehearing, okay, and all this stuff came out that this Bibaraj just messed the whole thing up. Just incompetence is what it looks like. So Bibaraj's office did not respond to the Fox News request for comment, of course. Smith was not alone in pointing fingers at Bibaraj. Loudoun County Supervisor Caleb Kirshner, who supervised the assailant's defense lawyer, said in a Facebook statement that he personally stepped into the matter when he was an employee, informed him that the Commonwealth Attorney's Office had violated this young defendant's due process rights during sentencing. Okay, so he's not necessarily dealing with the progressiveness of this particular woman. He's just dealing with her ineptitude. And you have to be able to get in. You got to find this stuff out and root it out. It's a big deal. And then it came out. She told Loudoun Now that she made the request to delay the assailant's trial after the May 28th incident in collaboration with the victim's family. That would be Mr. Smith, advising the family that waiting for DNA evidence to confirm the sodomy allegations would bolster the case. Yet Mr. Smith vehemently denied this claim. "My wife and I were shocked," he said, "but not surprised by the assertion that we somehow collaborated with Commonwealth's attorney, Buddha Bibaraj, in her decision to delay the trial of the predator who attacked our daughter. Nothing could be further from the truth. We had neither any input nor collaboration in that decision-making process. Rather, those decisions were made exclusively by her without our input." So there's that. And then I saw this other one. Then I saw this one. This, because this is odd. Virginia judge boots liberal DA off the criminal case for misleading the public. GOP AG prepared to take over. I'm like, what? Loudoun County, Virginia? What? Here we go again. The Loudoun County, Virginia judge removed the county commonwealth's attorney office from a serial burglary case for deliberately misleading the court and the public. And who's in charge of that office? Buddha Bibaraj. That's why you have to pay attention to these things. And I'm like, hey, 2 + 2 = 4. Get this person out. And this progressive movement inside the criminal justice system, who, on one hand, I can appreciate, even like Chesa or Chesa, whatever his name is, out in San Francisco. I can appreciate if it's authentic. We have too many people incarcerated. That's true. And how we handle a lot of things in the criminal justice system is wrong. That's true. However, these people appear to have no understanding whatsoever of human depravity. So they have this like Pollyanna-ish look at the world, which won't work. And so if you, let's get rid of some bail and cash bail, let's get rid of that. And let's do some of this over here. And let's take it a little easier over here. It's just denying the reality that human beings are broken. Human depravity is real. And like our founding fathers, you have to operate based on that reality. So it's just like Pollyannish ignorant, the progressive movement inside the criminal justice system, which again, on one hand, I'm like, okay, I agree with you. There's some problems here. On the other hand, you're denying the sad reality of human depravity. And I'm glad these two stories came out literally back to back and that people are taking action. And up there in Loudoun County, Virginia, which is now being run by a good governor and a great attorney or lieutenant governor, Winsome, it's her name. Praise the Lord, they're going to get involved. And that's what you need. That's why you vote and pray for voting in elections, because they have consequences. All right, how about this one? Captain America thinks you're an idiot. Actor Chris Evans slams critics who don't want the gay kiss in the Toy Story spinoff. Actor and activist Chris Evans on Tuesday slammed critics who don't approve of a gay kiss, it's lesbian, in the latest Toy Story spinoff, Lightyear, which opens, I think, Thursday. Disney Pixar reinstated the same-sex kiss between two female characters, Alicia and her wife, quote-unquote, following Florida's parental rights and education bill, which bans classroom discussion of anything related to sexuality and gender to children in third grade and younger, as it should. Quote, the real truth is those people are idiots, Captain America told Reuters, slamming critics of the kiss. Every time there's been social advancement as we wake up, the American story, the human story, is one of constant social awakening and growth. And that's what makes us good. There's your being woke right there. Evans similarly gushed over the gay kiss in an interview with Variety on Monday. Quote, Disney put a line in the sand saying, we're putting this back in, but also we're not going to remove it. For any other territories like Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, they're all saying, nope, you're not showing your movie over here. In these places that would have a problem with it, a Variety reporter said. What did you make of the company making that decision? I mean, it's great, the actor responded, as great as it is. And you know, I've been asked the question a few times. It's nice and it's wonderful. It makes me happy. It's not to be a little frustrated. It's tough to not be a little frustrated that it even has to be a topic of discussion, Captain America said. That is the kind of news. That it's this kind of news. The goal is that we can get to a point where it is the norm and that this doesn't have to be some uncharted waters, that eventually this is just the way it is. That representation across the board is how we make films. Look, it's an honor to be a part of something that is taking those steps, but the goal is to look back on this time and just be shocked that it took us this long to get there, Captain America said. Right. It took us way too long to totally sexualize and give our children a totally deviant understanding of human sexuality, gender, identity, and all the rest of it. Great. Woke Captain America. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back, all you idiots. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. I didn't call you an idiot. Chris Evans did. If you have a problem with Disney's gay kiss, the lesbian kiss in the new Pixar movie Lightyear, then Captain America thinks you're an idiot. That's what he said. I didn't say it. He said it. Chris Evans. So there you go. So we'll bounce out of that one to this. Irresponsible. Megyn Kelly rips Fox News over segment promoting child's gender transition. Because Fox has been all in for Gay Pride Month. Have you noticed that? Journalist Megyn Kelly blasted her former employer, Fox News, this week for running a segment that promoted the gender transition of a young child. I watched this one. The segment, which ran on Fox News on Friday, features a child named Ryland Whittington, who was socially transitioned as a boy at just age 5 by her parents. Reporter Brian Linus heaped praise on Ryland for having the extraordinary courage to share the story, particularly at a time when transgender issues have been politicized. Kelly, a former Fox News anchor, told Newsmax host Eric Bolling, that it was irresponsible for the network to broadcast the segment as it did. Quote, it's irresponsible to put it on the air like this as a celebration without flagging For the parents out there who are going through this, the significant downsides of jumping onto this without making sure you're in that very, very small percentage of cases where this gender dysphoria, might actually be a thing, the journalist said. To not flag the significant downsides of what happens to these kids when they're put on puberty blockers, when they're put on cross-gender hormones. By the way, when that's done to girls, they're sterile. They can't have children anymore. And you can go down the list. It's irresponsible to their mission, she continued. I mean, I don't expect any of the mainstream press to do it. Kelly said that the vast majority of children who suffer from gender confusion grow out of it, adding that many of these kids grew up to be gay. I don't know that. I'd have to look that one up. Therefore, she argued, the mass transitioning of children is a, quote, a weird form of conversion therapy by default. That's an interesting thought. Kelly was not the only one to call out the shocking Fox News report, which was part of the news network's America Together. This is Fox News, okay? America Together LGBTQ plus Pride Month series. Notably, Daily Wire editor emeritus Ben Shapiro and podcast host and author Matt Walsh, both of whom are sometimes guests on Fox News, made lengthy comments condemning the segment, which seemed woke even by MSNBC or CNN standards. Shapiro bluntly called the report, quote, absolute horrifying propaganda, condemning the actions of Ryland's parents as child abuse. Now, this is really scary stuff that these parents, who I think I watched the segment. I don't know how I saw it. I watched it maybe on YouTube or something. I watched the segment and the parents, you know, you have this five-year-old who's convinced, she's convinced she's a boy. And you're like, they're just going down this road. And now we have so many parents. It's so common in our culture that you have to affirm everything, even when it's coming from a five-year-old. So now they just go all in. And so Ryland now, who's, I don't know, 10 or something, when you look at this segment, if you didn't know any better, you're like, that's just a 9-year-old boy. Except what's going, like, hormones? Estrogen? What's going on there? Hormone blockers? Messing with puberty? Now, and I just read another article the other day, which was just heartbreaking. It was actually on Twitter, a string of tweets from a transgender person who's detransitioned as much as they could, talking about the unbelievable, horrific, painful, life-altering, just abusive fallout from their transition surgeries. And these people that come out and say, okay, it worked for a little bit, but it's not anymore. Plus, there's all kinds of physical and emotional and psychological downsides to this transitioning business. And it's just brutal. So when you run a story about a little five-year-old and his family who are all in on it, you make it seem like it's all fine. And this, I just went in and we got it fixed and now everything's grand and happy and everything. And he's only like 9 or 10 and you got puberty blockers and all that stuff. And so what happens with her breast, this little girl? You get a 13-year-old with a double mastectomy? Because that's happening now too. So when the words child abuse come out on this, for anybody under 18, I completely agree with that. It is. And you have so many parents, not the least of which are some Hollywood-type people, that their 8-year-old's telling them, I'm actually the opposite gender. I know I've got a boy's body, but I'm actually a girl. Oh, okay, well, thank you. You're so brave for bringing that up. Not for one second thinking there's actually something wrong here, like gender dysphoria. You just go with it. It's just, it's heartbreaking. Which leads me to this. We'll finish with this by Ben Shapiro. The fight over identity. America has been wrecked on the shoals of identity. Identity politics has been characterized casually as a form of tribalism. Americans grouping themselves according to biological or sexual characteristics in opposition to other groups associated by biological or sexual characteristics. And there's certainly truth to the idea that such tribalism has damaged America in extraordinary ways, that tribalism acts as the sort of factionalism the founding fathers feared, tearing Americans from each other and forcing them into polarized units competing against others in a battle over control. That's exactly where we're at. But there's another form of identity politics even more sinister than the sort of tribalism we see so openly today. That is a form of identity politics that focuses less on politics than on identity. The redefinition of identity itself. For thousands of years, human beings established their identities by learning how to adapt to the systems in which they lived, gradually changing those systems for the better after determining the flaws within the system. This is how parents traditionally civilize children, by adapting them to their civilization. But as Carl Truman explains in his masterful book, The Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self, The post-Enlightenment era tore away at the core assumption of such notions of identity. Instead of adapting ourselves to the institutions around us and forming our identity within those institutions, human beings in the West began to locate their identity within, meaning themselves, to look to their own sense of authenticity as the guide to fulfillment. In this view, identity was not formed in tandem with civilization, but in opposition to it. Only by rebelling against the structures of our surrounding society, by breaking free of convention, could individuals finally achieve fulfillment. Follow your heart, right? Furthermore, fulfillment would require not merely an interior sense of identity, but a sense of identity cheered and celebrated by everyone else. After all, human beings still feel the need for acceptance. This, I could preach out of this. To reject someone else's authentic self, sense of self-identification, therefore, becomes an act of emotional violence. That's exactly right. You have now taken this view to its logical endpoint, total subjectivism, requiring the destruction of any and all conflicting viewpoints or data. Take, for example, a recent New York Times piece applauding the rise of so-called neo-pronouns. With the explosion of new subjective identities and the demand that others endorse those identities, has come a wave of new pronouns. We're no longer talking about biological males demanding that others identify them as she or her, in contravention of all available objective science. We're now talking about people insisting that others call them kitten self, or vamp self. Now, some might find this to be a frivolous nonsense disconnected from any true sense of identity. But as the New York Times blithely notes, quote, "What's the difference between an aesthetic and an identity anyway?" Again, I've been saying this for months now. Ideology trumps reality. Reality is gone. It's just ideology. And in this case, the ideology of self, the ultimate idolatry, right? I am whatever I say I am. This is saying the quiet part out loud. Ben Shapiro writes, "For decades, those who insist that identity is constructed in opposition to society's rules, rules that must be eliminated in order to achieve human flourishing, that's progressivism, have suggested that authentic identity is more than mere aesthetics. But now the Times, New York Times, has given away the show. When you construct identity tabula rasa, seeing all history and science as obstacles to happiness, identity quickly flattens into aesthetics. And we are all expected to agree with your sense of aesthetics, unless, as the Times notes, you identify as BLM. In that case, you are encroaching on longstanding areas of sensitivity and must atone." Here's the last paragraph. Ben Shapiro: "When identity becomes pure aesthetics, society completely atomizes. No free society can be rooted in utter subjectivity. Someone must enforce silence from the top, bar dissenters, and punish those who insist on objective data. And that's precisely what we are currently seeing from an authoritarian left. An authoritarian left that arrived with the promise of fulfillment and authenticity and has instead delivered emptiness and aesthetic pretension enforced by institutional fiat." Which is why so many people are just afraid to speak out. People are just afraid to speak out. And I don't want people to think I'm hateful or insensitive or mean or condescending. I just don't want, especially if I'm a Christian, because everybody can say to me, "Hey, you Christians, you're supposed to be all about love, but yet you won't affirm my identity," which is clearly not loving me. You hate me. And so there's way too many Christians, I fear, that just don't know how to deal with that, which would make you, in essence, a man pleaser. It doesn't matter how society responds to your positions. It does not matter. And, 5, 7, 8, 10 years ago, I used to say, "I don't care what people think of me." Well, that's good and bad. Because the Bible does tell us, this New Testament does tell us, that we are to be above reproach and that we should have a good reputation. And a good reputation amongst unbelievers. Well, a reputation amongst unbelievers is based on what they think of you. So, based on things that you can control, okay, how do you treat people generally? What kind of business do you run? What kind of customer are you? How do you care for your neighbor? How do you care for the poor? General things like that. But when it comes to speaking the truth, to not buying into the lies of society, you have to divorce yourself from societal opinion that cannot dictate your allegiance to the truth of God's word. It cannot, it must not, it should not. So you speak, you stand up for truth. We do it with as much grace and compassion and patience as we can. But you have to do it. You have to do it. And I'm telling you, the more you do it, the freer you will become. But always make sure, 1 Corinthians 13, always check your motivation. If you're going to speak boldly, you got to make sure you're speaking out of love.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.